Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Sensei.
Good morning, Sensei.
Last week, particularly during, well, not particularly, but during the practice circle, I thought a lot of really important ideas were exchanged. And this was about patience, if you recall. So I was writing down notes frantically and taking those notes and tried to extend our talk about patience using those notes. And just as a couple of ways to set this up. And a lot of this talk, I will make reference to Bernie Glassman because he was my teacher and because he has been a longtime guide throughout my life, particularly more recently in dealing with social change and being an activist. I love this. He talks about that each of us belongs to a club. And the question, of course, is who do we invite into our club and who do we exclude from our club? And he refers to these as think-alike clubs. So he uses examples, and if we think about liberals, liberals probably don't invite over conservatives, and they probably don't watch the same TV news shows, and they probably don't read the same newspaper, and generally speaking, their outlook on life is probably different. The same thing is true for conservatives in the opposite direction. So the question comes up, if we live in these think-alike boxes, how does this affect patients and how does it affect how we live our lives? Now, these think-alike boxes can be founded on our political view, our worldview, our religious view, our racial view. It's an endless list of clubs that we can belong to. And each club, I think, feels that they have the truth about any particular issue. So my frame of reference for giving this talk is that Bernie also talks about, he says that there are no truths. And somebody asked him, well, what about the four noble truths? And he said, no, it's the four noble opinions that there are no truths. So I'm going to share with you my opinions and hopefully keep an open mind. Now, I'm going to use, and you've heard about this many times before, this is part of my life. This is part of the way I work in the world. And that is using the tenets of the Zen peacemakers. So in a minute or so, I'm going to go over those as they're expressed. I'm going to read how Bernie expresses those. So all of this is in the context of being patient. Now, there's a story from the Lotus Sutra that I found, that I included it in my talk, and then I said, man, anyway, I'm going to read it, and I think it relates to patience. So the story goes as follows. A young man leaves his father and wanders abroad for years, and eventually he's reduced to poverty, and he later accidentally comes to the city where his father has, in the meantime, become very wealthy. The father recognizes his son, but the son doesn't recognize his father. And the father wishes to receive his son as heir to his new wealth. So he sends out messengers. But when the messengers arrive, the son is thoroughly scared by their intentions. Of course, based on his life experience, and he fears the worst. So the father realizes the psychological difficulties of his son, created by his leaving home and his poverty. So therefore, the father changes his plan. He does not reveal his relationship to his son, but instead arranges menial work for him to do. And gradually, he gives his son more responsibility and better pay, slowly building up his confidence until he can treat him as an adopted son and give him responsibility for the whole estate. At last, the father, who is near the end of his life, calls together many witnesses and reveals the whole true story and the relationship he has with his son. So I think the way that this father handled the ingredients that he was handed was an example of using patience to deal with the situation. So what I'm going to do is I've taken what I think are a bunch of important elements that are involved with being patient. And I'm going to go through them And each one of them, in my own experience, in my own opinion, is that each one is not just a simple statement, but it has a pretty deep meaning. So after I mention briefly each one, I'm going to ask us to take maybe a 30-minute moment of silence just to reflect on what I've said, and then I'll go on to the next one. So the first one that I have, now this comes up a lot in Zen and in talks that I've given, but I think it's extremely important in terms of being patient, because one of the things that interrupts being patient is if we think of ourselves as two, me and Tony. But if I think of me and Tony as not belonging to different clubs, as being one, my ability to patience will probably be quite different. So the first part is oneness of life. So realizing the oneness of life is essential when working for change. It's the foundation for any action. It is also the heart of our practice. So patience is not something that we apply or make use of in a particular situation. So as we develop ourselves emotionally and spiritually, it becomes a way of being. Just like love, when I talked about love, is a way of being. It's not something. So being patient is a natural expression of the oneness of life. It is the constancy that Suzuki Roshi talked about that I mentioned last week when he said, in constancy, there is no particular effort involved. There's a particular effort involved that's making two. So there is only the unchanging ability to accept things as they are. So let's sit with that for a few seconds, and then I'll start the next one. So the second element that I'm going to talk about has to do with I just mentioned, the tenets of the Zen Peacemakers. By the way, I am a member of the Zen Peacemaker, which is again why this is so important to me. And these tenets are a guide for social activism. And these are direct personal expressions by Bernie of what they mean. Now, they were much longer when I read them to put together for this talk. So what I'm giving you is the words of Bernie, but in an abbreviated way. And so the first tenet is not knowing. And this is what Bernie has to say about that. Not knowing is entering a situation without being attached to opinions, ideas, or concepts. This means total openness to the situation, deep listening. It is being intimate with the circumstances, and we don't enter with attachment to a particular outcome. And as you can imagine, attachment to a particular outcome can certainly create a lot of impatience. That outcome doesn't occur. So the second tenet is bearing witness. And it's the role of the Bodhisattva to bear witness. Ultimately, the Bodhisattva accepts all the difficult feelings and experiences that arise as part of everyday life. They're accepted as nothing but a pointing to the present moment in which to live a life of service. And bearing witness gives birth to a deep and powerful intelligence that does not depend on study or action, but on presence. That's the heart of bearing witness, is being present. So we become intimate with whatever appears, whatever presents itself, whether it's disease, war, racism, poverty, death. When you bear witness, you're simply there and you don't flee. And the third tenet is loving action. And originally it was compassionate action, and then it was changed to loving action. Those actions that arise naturally when one enters a situation in a state of not knowing and then bears witness to that situation. Those actions that arise naturally when one enters a situation in a state of not knowing and then bears witness to that situation is part of loving action. And it has nothing to do with opinions or ideologies. It's action grounded in love, patience, and a connectedness to the oneness of life. So those are the three. So we'll sit for a few more seconds. Okay, I'm going to discuss the next element. And that's the element of acceptance. Now this is an element that sometimes I think gets confused. And I want to make sure that I point this out clearly, that acceptance is not resignation. It doesn't mean we say, well, I guess we're stuck with this. Just make the best of it, you know. It's not resignation. It's accepting life as it is, life as it presents itself. And Bernie wrote a book, Instructions to the Cook, where he talks about taking the ingredients that the circumstances present, and out of those circumstances, out of those ingredients, we make the best meal. And this, the circumstances that we're offered, are the starting place for social action. We have to accept those circumstances before we can attempt to make the best meal. And we will also then be best able to serve others in a clear and unclouded, direct way. And I've read this last week, and I love the Serenity Prayer because I think it expresses this very clearly, and I'm going to read that again. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, and the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Now, to me, that's a very clear guideline for being a social activist. And it's also a clear guideline to prevent us from becoming impatient and perhaps even making the situation worse because of our impatience. So let's sit a few more seconds with that. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about is emotions. Last week, the emotion of anger was mentioned. And I think that's a particularly powerful and important emotion to investigate. But there are many other emotions which also need to be tended to. So I think part of becoming a social activist is keeping our own house clean, keeping our own inner emotional life straight. Because if we're not straight with ourselves, it's going to be very difficult to be straight out in the world with others. And so we, as part of being a social activist, have to continually do our own personal work, take care of our own personal dark places and prejudices. So self-awareness is vital, especially when, well, it's vital anyway, but particularly in this case, when working on behalf of others. And these emotions can affect how we see the world and how we participate in the world. So there are a variety of emotions that may interfere with our ability to see clearly and to be patient. And some of these emotions, some of the more profound emotions are, to me, number one, anger, and then fear, anxiety, desire, and many more. But to me, these are the most prominent. So I'm going to talk just very briefly about anger. If we are angry about the suffering of others, that can produce a lot of anger and a desire to bring about change. And if this anger, this energy, anger is a very powerful energy, if this energy can be transformed, it can be used constructively to relieve the suffering of others. But if our action is self-centered, our actions will not be for others. They will be used to express and release that anger for selfish reasons. So it's an important part in relation to impatience. If we do not tend to the anger that is selfish, it will become a vengeful energy and probably do much more harm than good. So in order to use the energy of anger, just to say it again, we must transform it into a positive energy. A selfless energy, an energy that's in service of others. If it remains a selfish anger, an anger that comes from a place of two, me against those horrible people, that anger will probably turn to being vengeful and will be very harmful. Now, I'm going to talk about this later, but the demonstrations that have been taking place over the last few months regarding the murder of George Floyd. Later, I will demonstrate the difference between the anger response to it and the love response to it, the non-angry way to respond to it. And each emotion, if it's outside of our personal awareness and not tended to, as I said, can interfere with our ability to serve others. Let's sit with anger for a minute. Okay, so let me share with you my next opinion. There is a statement that comes up and has been around for ages. And the statement is, this is not the time for patience. This is the time for action. So my opinion is that action without wisdom is destructive. You know, when we witness the suffering of others, we want to put an end to that suffering. And this may give to a very powerful urge, a very powerful energy to help. And in order to use this energy in service of others, it's important to see the difference between reactivity and love and compassion. And this energy used without patience can be destructive and create further suffering. So this energy to do good, to serve others, can be very powerful, filled with a lot of emotion, but it's very important that it is not reactive, that it is done in service of others. So I wanted to just mention this. This is my opinion about the demonstrations that have occurred as a result of George Floyd's murder. So these demonstrations have been going on for 2 months and 3 days. It's the last that I read very recently. And the overwhelming number of people that have participated in these demonstrations have been law-abiding and nonviolent. They have not been reactive. They have been performed with wisdom. And they have taken place all over the country and in other parts of the world. Acts of wisdom. At the same time, there has been a relatively small number of protesters that have started fires, assaulted police, etc. And these, of course, have received just as much attention by the news services and by the Trump administration as the much larger nonviolent and demonstrations grounded in wisdom. So the problem is that the Trump administration, one of the problems, tried to use this behavior to portray the entire protests as violent and the behavior of anarchists. So this small group of people that acted violently out of anger and out of a lack of wisdom, that behavior can be turned around and used against the nonviolent protesters. So this is why it's important not to be reactive, but to act out of wisdom. So we have the reactivity of a few endangering and having a powerful impact on the majority. So the last thing that I want to do is read a little excerpt from an article. It's written by a fellow named George Gonzalez. And in there, he takes an excerpt from a book called The People's History of the United States, which is written by Howard Zinn. And he writes about that in a couple of paragraphs. Just to give a little background, George Zinn is an American historian, playwright, a social thinker who wrote extensively about the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, and the labor history of the U.S. And so this is what he has to say about activism. You do things again and again, and nothing happens. You have to do things. You have to light that match. Light that match. Light that match. Not knowing how often it's going to sputter and go out and at what point it's going to take hold. Things take a long time. It requires patience, but not a passive patience. The patience of activism. We should be encouraged by historical examples of social change, by how change takes place suddenly when you least expect it. Not because of a miracle from on high, but because people have labored patiently for a long time. So I started to create a list of people who have been social activists and have acted from a place of love, patience, and wisdom. The list was endless, too long for me to copy down all the names, but I'll give you an example of people that have acted with love and patience and were not reactive. Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, Rosa Parks, Gloria Steinem, Gandhi, Greta Thunberg, Angela Davis, Cesar Chavez, and on and on and on. People who have led powerful movements without being grounded in anger and reactivity. So those are my opinions. So let's sit for the remaining part of the period, and then let's throw it about. Let's talk about it together. Thanks.